AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Our next author is one we've talked to before about his books, Bar Yarns and Manic Depressive Mixtapes, and Gold Experience Following Prince in the 1990s. Jim Walsh is back. He's got a brand new book, Fear and Loving, in South Minneapolis. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about that new book. Hey, Jim.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Congratulations on the new book. Actually, before we get into that, I want to ask you really quick. You, of course, many people recognize you from City Pages. You were the music editor over at City Pages. Here, City Pages went, you know, down and is no longer publishing. I imagine that's got to be a little hit.
Yeah, it's a huge hit. You know, I've written about it, and you know, it's an odd thing. Wednesday is now. I mean, it was a 41-year run for City Pages, and very much the fabric of this community. You know, Wednesdays were a, you know, you had the same right every Wednesday. You'd pick up City Pages, and as digital went, you'd go to the website, and there'd be voices there and stories there that you didn't get anywhere else, and I was part of that. Yeah, I mean, it was my first real job, I guess, in journalism, and I loved it, and I wrote tons of cover stories and columns at City Pages, and it's a huge loss. With the Southwest Journal going down this month has made, you know, something of a news desert in Minneapolis, leaving us with, you know, kind of the legacy newspaper and the and legacy radio stations. And I can feel it, you know, I'm sure you guys can.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, when voices go away like that, there's a, and journalism professors can do it better than I can, but there is a, an oppressive vibe, I think. I think there's a cloud over a community when that happens. And, you know, that's just the truth. It's, stories aren't getting out there. Reporting isn't getting out there. Voices are not getting out there. And I'm haunted by that, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of journalists who are out of work now from City Pages and the Southwest Journal. And, you know, I read 10 newspapers a day, and when City Pages and the Southwest Journal were going, I read them every week, you know, and I'm haunted by where those stories go, where those voices go. So, yeah, tough 2020 for a million reasons, and those are a couple of in the loss column for sure.
And when you talk about this, as you describe that, one of the things which will bring this back to your book here, because I think great writers are artists, and the sense being is that an artist will paint whatever they see around them. Great writers, as you talk about City Pages, the stories they would tell that often were ignored completely by other media outlets here, it was because the writers were, you know, ingratiated within the community, that they were part of that community. Your book, Fear and Loathing in South Minneapolis, it's a series of tales, stories that you basically explore from the people of South Minneapolis, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a collection of, and it's Fear and Loving, not Fear and Loathing.
Fear and Loving, forgive me.
That'd be Hunter.
That'd be Hunter, yes. Fear and Loving in South
God
Minneapolis.
Bless Hunter.
Yes.
Hunter.
Forgive me.
But yeah, it's a collection of, the first collection I did was a music collection, Bar Yarns and Manic Depressive Mixtapes, and, you know, U of M Press, my publisher, just wanted music for that collection, but, I always had it in my head that I wanted a collection like this with more life stories, neighborhood stories, Minneapolis, and the world stories. I kind of grew up as a writer, as I went along, someone mentioned it to me, you know, kind of when I was at the Pioneer Press, you should think about, you know, doing a collection. And, you know, as you're writing, as you're going so hard, for decades, you're like, yeah, I'll get to that maybe. And, you know, now is the time. And, coincidentally, these newspapers have gone down and things have changed drastically in South Minneapolis. And it's a history book at this point, of a lot of stories. It opens with my interview with Ilhan Omar when she, when she first won her first election. And, there's little historical bits in there of a time that's gone and yet preserved, this Minneapolis that we love, these Twin Cities that we love, is made up of people, brilliant people, who I'm lucky to have, written about and interviewed and just sort of observed, as a writer. And yeah, I love it. I love that it's out. It's getting out there finally this week. And we have the release party at Majors and Quinn, and we're just going to keep going from there.
Were these, did you revisit any stories that were previously published, or are these all stories that you had that you wanted to eventually tell?
These, say it again?
How many of these stories had you already, had you ever talked about these stories, printed about these stories, written about these stories in other publications? Or were these stories, like I said, that basically they were always there, they just, for whatever reason, it was never something that went to one of your other print articles that you had done?
There's a few stories in this collection like that, but because I write in between the reprinted stories, but they're mostly from the archives, and it's, and I, it is interesting, just like if you, as a newspaper person, when you're cranking stuff out, I'm always concerned about, or I have been, kind of like, where do these go? How do I keep these? Prince said to me once, Prince said, "Be on your masters," like when we were, when he was going through his whole Warner Brothers stuff. And that stuck in my head, too. And it was sort of like, I would like, because you pour your blood into this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was important to me to have them under, in between two hardcovers, in Fear and Loving's case, paperback. But, it's a good read. It's a good quiet read at a crazy time, and I'm thrilled that people are getting stuff out of it from the early feedback I'm getting.
When I'm fascinated by people who really do have their fingers on the pulse, and like yourself, I think that you understand this city better than most people do. And I don't know if that's because you came through the music scene. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you're just a damn good writer. But I want to ask you, when the idea of when you see someone who might not, obviously when Prince or Ilhan Omar or something like that, you see these people, you obviously there's historical importance to it. There's a story there. But you have the ability to kind of just see people on the street and say, that guy seems interesting. What is it about certain people that just draws you to them and creates the story?
I think that I have a curiosity, and I have a pretty good ear and eye for what might be a good story, or might be interesting, or and I have, I have great empathy too going forward. It's like you guys at the radio station. I think that it doesn't get talked much about, but why do we get into people businesses like this of telling stories, of being parts of community? It's empathy, I think. And I feel I'm out there. I go, oh my God, what? Being at 38th in Chicago for, the George Floyd stuff and covering that and covering COVID, covering closed bars and restaurants. It's just empathy and, trying to impart a person's, experience with words. And it can be done, and it can be very effective, and it can live on, you know, long after the interview or you know, the writing session. So I would just say empathy, and I'm a good listener. I mean, it is music. It is the music scene. I was dipped in that very early on, and that will give you an insight and an avenue into the people of a city and state. And I'm lucky because I voraciously, you know, loved the music scene here and been a singer and songwriter. And I keep thinking that's the one thing that I really am starting to miss about not playing live music is, you know, pretty regularly, I mean, singing for sure, but, you know, in a rock band, you get to scream your head off, and that's what I'm missing right now, like, that feeling of just, like, because everything is screamable about, and yeah, I miss that right now for sure. So I'm going to do that more when the worm turns.
Well, and it's funny because you say that. I, as a person who's lived out of the cities and lived around surrounding states, the worst concert you would ever see at the 7th Street entry would be the best concert you would see in a freaking Des Moines. It would. I mean, just it would. Yeah. It would be one of the better – it would probably be one of the best concerts you'd see of the year in Omaha. And we don't really see how good this music scene is until you go someplace else and say, God, this sucks. And you know, you
– It's true.
It is true. It's 100% true. Even the dive bars, you know, you'll go in and you'll see some band playing. That band would be the headliner on any night in any other town. And here they are just playing a bar. And, you know, it is something that we don't understand how that story is so intertwined across all the genres through Minneapolis and into South Minneapolis particularly.
I mean, when you can go – I mean, literally, when your instinct is like, okay, there's five shows I could go to tonight.
Yeah.
And these are all, you know, local music and friends. And you go, okay, what do I do? That's an embarrassment of riches.
Yes.
And you're right. It does not happen everywhere. And, you know, the one thing I can say about the pandemic and having been shut down and everything, I'm really grateful that I've done it as hard as I have for so many years that when the breaks kind of went on, I was like, oh, you know, there's still a lot of music to partake in, be it archives and just, you know, recorded music and stuff. And for a while there, I was like, it's kind of okay to have a break at all this going out and all this activity just to truly just listen. But now finally, you know, a year in, I'm like, you know, I'd give anything to, you know, wander up to the Driftwood Char Bar and, you know, see somebody blowing the roof off of that place.
You and I also share, and I'm very happy to say that you and I share a place that I find solace. That's the Rose Garden over by Lake Harriet.
Right on, man.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I took some photos of my daughter this year over there. I just love that place. It's just peaceful. And
it's beautiful.
You write about that and reflecting on one of your lost friends there.
Yeah, my buddy, I have a favorite bench over there. My friend Carl Mueller passed away from esophageal cancer. Going on how many years now? And it's, I always say the same thing. Hey, man, how you doing? I have my guitar and just, it's a great stop for, I try to do it a couple times a week just to, you know, recalibrate, and I love it. I love the nature. I love people watching. I bring my headphones and my guitar and my book, and it's truly in the city. It's really a getaway, and it's just absolutely been a touchstone for me. So I'm glad you know it and have discovered it. And, you know, since the pandemic, I mean, my God, it's like, you know, it's a parking lot now. I mean, I used to be the only one there, and now it's just, there's picnics and, you know, parties and, you know, the more the merrier, bring it. But, man, there's a lot of people at the Rose Garden now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that a lot of places now. It's just there. All of a sudden people are rediscovering the city. And that's a good thing because the city is awesome. And
it is.
Let's one final thing here. You mentioned it, what happened with George Floyd and how South Minneapolis exploded. I went out and drove through the carnage and my heart was breaking. I just saw the New York Times. You're in pictures. Not only is it one of their bigger, you know, the picture of the year comes from Minneapolis, but they also have, you know, one whole folded page of photos from Minneapolis and the chaos. And I think that, you know, talk about that, because the city will survive. The city will be here. And there's an essence to the city that will not go away. But this is one of those things where it's like the city needed to be shaken. And it feels as if, you know, it definitely did.
Yes. I mean, you know, Minneapolis is a dirty little secret of redlining and institutional racism. And then the cops is there for all the world to see now. The New York Times and, you know, the Irish Times and, you know, all across the world. That moment is significant with a reckoning. And it's on. It's happening. And there's going to be, you know, bruised egos and all, but, you know, the racial disparities and the fight for equity and equality has been going on in this town and country for decades, for generations. And, you know, as of May 25th, it has a whole new frame and a whole new urgency and a lot more participants who are, you know, seeing the horror of all this and just utter, I'm a newly woke person this year, having seen the institutional racism of, be it, you know, Ava DuVernay's 13th, or, you know, I'm reading, you know, an Indigenous History of the United States right now. These are things that happened to me this year, you know, that are personal and important. And I know it's happening on a much larger scale, but I really have, you know, as a thinker and writer and just person, I want to know more about this country. And I have. I've dug deep this year, and it's obvious to historians and people who do this work, but it wasn't to me. And I think that's emblematic of the change that's going on all over the world. If you got your eyes open and your ears open and your heart open, you're going to learn. But if you're just closing it down, you're going to be a white person that is constantly frustrated and angry at the world, and, you know, flying your Trump flag. So good luck with that life, because that's a sad existence, I think.
You just nailed it. You know, the people that, if you can't look in the mirror and realize what's your problems, what's your faults, and realize focus on how the real world is, I can't help you. But I'm not gonna encourage your fantasy land version of America that you think exists just because you want it to be that way. It's just, that's not how it works.
Right. Yeah. I think that they're, you know, that a lot of people are, I often think this, I don't think they have much going on in their lives. I just don't think they, either creatively or spiritually, I think they're easily led and manipulated, and we saw that over the last 6 years, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Trumpism is weak sauce. I think people are going to turn the channel. I'm not saying everything's going to be rosy in America. I think the Civil War and all of it, you know, will be, you know, here for long after we are. But this moment, 2020, I think you're being asked, and, you know, you know, I walked around Lake Erie the other day with a buddy, and I wore my Black Lives Matter mask, and A, I was one of four people I saw at the lake with a mask on. And, you know, people didn't like it over at Lake Harriet. I could tell. And I think that that's where we're supposed to be right now, uncomfortable. And not that that's why I was doing it or bringing it or anything, but, you know, yeah, I'm going to wear this mask. I'm going to wear this hat. I am going to say it over and over because there's too many people that say otherwise. And it's time for that, as it has been. But it's 2020 has really spanked us upside the head. So,
Fear and Loving in South Minneapolis, Jim Walsh's latest book. Jim, as always, anytime you have anything, come on back. By all means, my friend, you're more than welcome on my show.
Thanks, man. We'll see you at the Rose Gardens.
I will see you. I'll be looking for you at the Rose Gardens.
Give me a buzz. I'll be on Carl's bench.
All right.
We'll hang out and have a song.
Jim Walsh, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.